Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The following is a presentation of the 4Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the 4Center podcast feed. I'm Ken Napsok.
And I'm Joseph Scrimshaw, and this is one of our News and Q's episodes. The news stands for news, and the Q stands for questions. Not, you know, Quiznos subs or any other Q word, just questions.
Oh, man, are you a Quiznos man, a Subway man, a Jersey Mike's man? Joseph, this is Sandwich Center. What's your take?
Yeah, well, for a long time, Jimmy John's was the thing for me. But there was a time way back when I worked in the warehouse for Fantasy Flight Games, when it was a tiny company before they had the Star Wars license that our listeners would know Fantasy Flight Games for. When it was teeny tiny, the ritual was we would go to Quiznos. And Quiznos at the time was like, we're different than everybody. We apply heat to our sandwiches. Amazing. It's impossible for anyone to replicate. And then somebody was like, yeah, we can do that.
We can do that even quicker. There used to be a Quiznos at the mall when I worked at for a while. And it was like watching your car get washed. You know, they're like, all right, we're going to put it in here. It's watch it go through. Like it was a thing. But all right. Okay. I'm still just. Them tasting like yoga mats. I still go for a Subway sandwich, but or a gas station sandwich.
And just because we brought it up real quick, the Quiznos subs ads with the strange freakish monsters with the weird teeth. Those played in California, right?
Yes, they did. Yes, it wasn't a fever dream you had in Minnesota.
Yeah, that was a shocker.
Every once in a while, Joseph and I love to talk about things not related to Star Wars or completely related, because I'd love a sandwich and just sit down and watch a Star Wars film. We are going to get to the news. We're going to get to those questions, not the quiz, no subs. Before we do that, we're going to remind you today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. A little bit later, you all know the drill. We're going to give you a Force Center Recommends, an audiobook we think you should try out on us and support the show in the process. Well, we've talked about sandwiches. Now it's time for life and or Star Wars adventures, my friend. How are you?
Good. Yeah, no, I had some sandwiches this week, and that was great. Life rolls on. I definitely had some moments where just all of the everything was, you know, there's so much going on in all of our personal lives and so much going on in the world that definitely had some moments where I retreated to Star Wars to just find some joy, either the philosophy of it, which helps center me sometimes, or also just I'm going to look at some action figures for a while. So Star Wars was there for me this week, and that was great. My main Star Wars adventure was that deluxe version of the Solo soundtrack came out, and my deepest heart's wish is true that it has the version of Chicken in the Pot with the proper Lulilo Primock, the proper Vat Weirdo singing in his nice, deep Bing Crosby baritone. So I was thrilled to download that.
I was going to address that even off air with you to see if you had caught up with that, because that was just needed. That was just needed in your life. And I hope that you maybe played it, turned the lights down, poured a martini, put on a suit and a tie, and enjoyed it in your living room.
Yeah, I verified it was there. I downloaded it because I just did this last night, and I think I'm going to wait until like late at night and listen to it. Yeah, when everything's calm and still. Yeah. So, and there's a bunch of other great stuff that isn't. I've listened to that Solo soundtrack a lot. It's great driving music. It's great writing music. So I've listened to it enough and then seen the film enough to go like, oh, that isn't there. That isn't there. Like the Maul Kira phone call. So I'm really looking forward to sitting down and listening to the whole thing.
It's a great soundtrack, and I'm glad it's getting some love. John Powell did a good job, I think, because, you know, Williams did the Han theme, but then John Powell, you know, took some other themes. I don't know. Maybe that just caused people to not give it the credit that it was due at the time the movie came out. But I love that soundtrack. So that score.
Yeah. Great stuff. How about you? What were your life indoor Star Wars adventures?
Oh, you know what? Not anything too exciting. Other than the work we've done, you and I are similar. We sometimes don't want to count Star Wars adventures for center prep, but they're often one and the same. Got to spend a lot of time in the Empire Strikes Back world. We're reviewing the book or discussing the first half of the From a Certain Point of View Empire Strikes Back edition on Thursday. So that was most of my Star Wars and life adventures. But that created a life adventure by, I try to get up early. I'm not an early riser anymore, but, you know, try to get up. But on Sunday, I think lunchtime rolled around. I was still in bed reading the book.
That's great.
Yeah, that counts as a life adventure.
Yeah, a great life adventure is I did not get out of bed. I just read a book, especially on a Sunday. That is just so peaceful and lovely.
It really was. And then for my brick building with Ken series over on Twitch and YouTube, I'm slowly building the U-Wing.
Really?
Yeah, it's not a huge, huge set. It just, the first day I wasn't feeling good when I started it. So I only did one bag of it's a 5-bag Lego set. And I just, you know, let's milk this. Let's just have some fun. And so I finally got to the underbelly of the U-Wing, which has the little, a neat little door and gun system. And it comes with a Bistan minifigure.
Ooh.
So, you know, Bistan in honor of Jennifer Landa. So that was actually kind of fun. I just, because it, you know, you and I, we talk Star Wars, we study Star Wars, read Star Wars. I build Lego Star Wars sets. And then every once in a while, you're just kind of, it's like learning to fly in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. You throw yourself at the ground and miss. Like, next thing you know, I'm like a kid on camera going, oh, that's where the gunner, that's where Bistan goes. And I'm just So that's Star Wars life rolled into one.
Yeah, bedtime and Bistan. Those are great adventures.
Mm-hmm. Bistan. Yes. With us all caught up, that's clearly everything that's gone on in the world. times. We are at a holiday coming up. You know, we're of course staying here. I imagine you and Sarah are staying here as well. So we'll all programming will be normal this week, I guess is what we should say, Joseph.
Oh, yeah, yeah, exactly. All programming will be normal. We will drop the normal deep dive episode. This one, like you said, about the From a Certain Point of View book, the first half of it. And Friday will be the Mando report, which I'm very much looking forward to.
Yeah, so while you're preparing a Thanksgiving meal, whether it's a family meeting safely or you by yourself, you can listen to the Force Center shows as normal. Right now, we are going to get into the news, and this is once again another week where I would say, hey, light on news and a lot of plush toys, a lot of things like that, but we got a pretty juicy headline we wanted to talk about here and talk about some things around it, Joseph, and this is from IGN, Daisy Ridley on Rey's journey while promoting Chaos Walking, her new movie. She was speaking with Jim Vavida, Schmodown favorite Jim Vavida, who works at IGN. And Daisy Ridley talked about Rey. And of course, you know, that's newsworthy. I say that half tongue-in-cheek, half cynical, and about 2%. No, I get it. It's news. So here's the takes here. Here's the rundown. She called the end of Rey's journey this. She said, I think for me, the beauty of episode 9 is it ends with such hope and such potential. I just feel like that was Rey's perfect ending. The big battle was in episodes 7, 8, and 9, Ridley said. And I think she's probably running around the forest somewhere having a great time. Rise of Skywalker. This, of course, kind of about, hey, you know, what would you feel about more stories? And then she added, I feel totally, totally satisfied. That's two totally's, people. Totally satisfied with how that story finished. I just don't know what else she could do that I didn't have to do. Also, there are so many amazing characters in Star Wars that it's sort of an amazing thing. I was watching the new episode of Mandalorian, and it's just like the places it can go beyond even where it is now is so exciting. End quote on that. So she also had some stuff on Baby Yoda we can touch upon if we want, but this is kind of, Joseph, this is good news for us. And this is part of what we're going to talk about here, but I just want to get your general thoughts on her thoughts on Rey and what she said in this article.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think I always want to do my best, especially when actors are talking, to try to see things from their point of view. You know, we're coming at it as Star Wars podcasters, you know, sharing our thoughts with people who love Star Wars. So we've got a real Star Wars all the time perspective. So like I always with these just even want to take a step back and remember this is an actor who is trying to promote another film.
Yes.
Trying to promote Chaos Walking that has been, you know, completed, I don't know, like 87 years ago and is finally coming out maybe in January. So she's out there promoting something else and lives in this era where she knows she's going to be asked about Star Wars with every other project she ever promotes. So I always start from that perspective that it's interesting to see how actors begin to talk about Star Wars. If it's a thank you, I know you have to ask, but I've said everything I have to say, or if it's just kind of an off-the-cuff joke, or if like this, she's willing to engage in a kind of substantive way, knowing that it's going to be headlines. And I think that's just interesting that she's willing to still engage in a sort of substantive way, talk not only about her character, but also like her opinions on The Mandalorian and that she's choosing to watch Mandalorian. So obviously, I love Rise of Skywalker. I love Rey's journey. I love those end beats. I've seen the film, you know, I think at least 10 times, if not more at this point. And I still get teary every time she says Rey Skywalker. I know it doesn't work for some other people, but it works incredibly well for me. So, of course, from my perspective, I'm happy that the actor is happy with it. That's always a nice thing. You got some great questions about that. So we're going to talk more about that. I also think my other reaction to this is, yeah, for me as a Star Wars fan, of course I would love it if Daisy Ridley was like, yes, I want to do a Rey Disney Plus show. I'm on the phone with Kathleen Kennedy every day. Let's do a hashtag. Let's make it happen. I would love that. But I also totally, fully respect that she is an actor. She's a human being. She just finished this massive journey and wants to do other things. She's at this, you know, point in her career where she's going to go off and do lots of other things, or maybe, you know, she'll have to work hard to get past every interview is Ray. Every interaction is, why aren't you playing Ray? So while I myself am like, yeah, I'm so anxious for more Ray storytelling, I also just want to take a big, deep breath and just have patience. And we know from life experience that actors often, with a nice big break from a character, with a nice big break from a franchise, and with more life experiences themselves, go, I would be really interested in revisiting that. And I'm more than happy to wait 10 years, 20 years, until Daisy Ridley, John Boyega, Oscar Isaac want to revisit them on the screen for myself.
Yeah, there's something, I'm going back to my youth, but at the end of Return of the Jedi, you know, I got to spend a lifetime wondering what happened next. And I'm so excited that I got to read and see and listen to what happened next in a canon way. But that came a lot later. I didn't think I'd ever hear that or see that in 2015, right? And I, if I'm being honest, part of the reason I wasn't as into the Legends as a lot of other people is, it wasn't even that it wasn't my Luke or what I thought happened to the story, is I just liked letting it go as well. And it just kind of living for me as I don't know what happened next with Luke. I can change it every day as a fan and daydream. And so I like for myself applying some of that to what Daisy's saying here and how she feels totally satisfied. And then there's just not much else she could have done. And yes, she could start school. And you and I have talked about, the Lego Holiday Special had some stuff, hints about what you could do with that character. And there's so much to do with it. I'm ready myself, I think more than I even thought going into reading this article, that I'm like ready just to let it lie for a little bit. And like you said, when the time is right or the performer feels it's time or they're ready to go back and visit it on a big scale, then I'd be excited about that, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not that I don't think there are stories to tell, but I also understand from an actor perspective of she's given this, very recently years of thought and discussion with the writers and the directors and hard work, and that like that she's found like who is Rey, what challenges her in the story of the sequel trilogy is she starts with all of these challenges and these fears and she overcomes them. And yeah, that arc of Rey is complete. So I totally understand her perspective of like, I'm not really ready. I feel like, this character just triumphed,
right.
I don't feel the need right now to revisit, her running into a new challenge.
Yeah. It'll be fun to imagine. And that's kind of what I think she was saying there too. And I love her version, running around the forest somewhere, having a great time. You agree with that sentiment, Joe?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's also like, this is a podcast, right? This is where this is all coming from. So I haven't had a chance to listen to it. And from some of the stuff she says about Mandalorian and Baby Yoda, I think she's answering honestly, but also like trying to have a sense of fun. And I sense that of like, yeah, I mean, I think in a way she's saying like, yeah, she found herself. She found her the way she wants to be a Jedi, and she found connection and family, and she's running around the forest enjoying that. And I think that's a nice thought too.
Absolutely. I want her to enjoy the victories and enjoy, some of my favorite little moments are her reaching out and feeling the rain on Octo, or, oh my gosh, Takedown is so green. I just want, at the Aki Festival, Ray has those little moments of, I never got to experience this. So I hope she takes a paid vacation.
Yeah.
Enjoy the galaxy. Here's what I wanted to talk out of this. And you mentioned the Baby Yoda comments, the eating the eggs and everything. She kind of had some takes on that, but I don't want to say takes. I think you're right. It was just kind of like, yeah, I didn't mind her eating the eggs, and there you go, and end of the conversation there.
She specifically says, and the frog lady does get what she wants too, so.
Yeah. Yeah. Great point. But here's something I want to discuss, because there's some reactions to this article that were very, very, I would describe as positive, because there are folks like you and I who absolutely love Rise of Skywalker, absolutely love Rey or the sequel trilogy. Even people who are like, maybe I don't love Rise of Skywalker, but I do love Rey and I do love the story. We have a lot of varied opinions here within the Force Center listener ranks. So we might hear or read an article like this, Joseph, and feel like, aha, see, we're justified in what we feel about this. And I was starting to, when I started to read this, I was like, aha. Then I just kind of thought to myself, all the articles that were shoved in my face were the clips and supercuts of Mark Hamill hates Last Jedi or hates Luke. Most of them forgetting that he does say in many interviews, oh, then I came around to it, or then I understood. even recently some stuff with John Boyega. There's some bigger issues that you and I are in agreement or understand where John's coming from, or understand that we don't fully understand where John's coming from, and we support him on that stuff. But there's also, we love that character, and there at times seems to be some thoughts that maybe he doesn't love Finn as much as we do or wanted other things, which is totally fair. And, you know, I just went down this path, Joseph, that I wanted to discuss with you of like, how much do we need these performers to like the Star Wars roles and stories they're in?
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, ultimately, it's a bonus, I think is the best way to say it. I feel like if a story gets created, it is ultimately that thing that we, the audience, are having a relationship with. And I think for issues that are as simple as, did the actor ultimately like the role? Did the actor ultimately like the movie? It's great. It's great to hear, you know, especially since there are some people who don't like the end of Rise of Skywalker. I've seen people even float the opinion that Daisy Ridley doesn't like it. So for me, yeah, it's a nice bonus when she comes out and says, actually, I did like it. I thought the end in particular was great. That's really nice. But my relationship is primarily with the film and what it means to me. You know, so there is this difference between, I think, actors going, I like that movie, I didn't like that movie. And then you creep into the real world, and that's different. If like an actor says, I was treated horribly on that film, so I can't watch it without remembering that I had a bad experience making it, then for me, maybe that does eat in. Or like, I think what John Boyega is bringing up is, you know, he certainly has opinions about the films themselves, but his largest issue seemed to be, I feel that you advertised Finn for The Force Awakens as being a main hero, and then he was not as large of a hero, and I feel like that has repercussions when we're talking about representation of Black people. So like, that to me is like so much bigger than, did the actor think this was an awesome Star Wars movie, thumbs up or thumbs down, right? So for me, there's that necessity to when I'm talking about actor opinions, to separate just the subjective good, bad, did I like the movie, versus is my criticism tied to a much larger, much more important social issue. But to answer your question the most directly, I'll just go to Alec Guinness, right? Obi-Wan is one of my favorite characters. I think Alec Guinness is brilliant. There's this interview I saw a couple of years back from back in the day that I think was like 1977, right after it came out, where he is being very charming on a British talk show and talking about how he helped George with some of the lines, and how George offered him a little cut, and that was quite nice. And he said some very nice things about the film, about how it turned out being this great little story about good and evil. And it's a nice throwback to older stories. It's very simple. Go out and enjoy it. And I'm paraphrasing, but he says something along the lines of, and I plead with you, don't overthink it. Don't spend a lot of time discussing it. It's just a simple story. Go enjoy it. And I kind of just have to like live with that irony of like, I'm sorry for the 5 hours of podcasts I spend a week talking about Star Wars, Alec Guinness, you know, absolute god of Star Wars, you know. So I am in such, like, our life activities, Ken, are in such direct opposition with something that one of the key actors of the original trilogy explicitly said in an interview. That always resets me of, yeah, I do care what the actors think. I'm always happier if they're happy. But if we're talking about just an opinion of, is it a good movie or a bad movie, you know, that it's just a bonus.
I love that term. I love that term that you're using, bonus. It is like we got the cake and now a side of French fries. Or a Quiznos sub and a Subway sub, based on our opening conversation there. In the case, specifically what you said of when people saying, oh, Daisy hated it too. Here's some clips, some out of context clips from a press interview or a red carpet, CCC. And then this comes out and kind of counters that. I do take some joy in that, maybe even some glee. I can't not admit that. I have to admit that I was like, ha-ha. Because again, the flip side, the Mark Hamill thing. Yes, you can find a lot of things where it seems like he is unhappy, and somewhere he directly says, oh, I feel I had a philosophical difference with this. And then they don't show the part where he's like, but I came around to it. I get it. That's how it works. So I take it as a bonus, and it's weird. I don't know if it's because we are so obsessed with behind the scenes stuff, not just in Star Wars, but this is for me. Like, I'm a big music guy. You're a music guy. You love Guns N' Roses. You can stop at what the music did for you and your life and what you get out of the albums, but also be intrigued and interested in the stories. But, you know, I never want to mix them together. You know, the fact that some of my favorite Beatles songs had George and Paul screaming at each other or something like that. I got to separate that, but I fall for it too. You know, I'm part of some things, you know, fortunately, you know, Four Center, we have a great time. You and I go forward every week. We chat, we're friends. We miss Jennifer. She misses us. I've been a part of other shows that people love that I don't talk with the host off air until the camera light goes red. And that's just the way it works. And I don't want that to take away from anyone's joy, but I fall for it too. So I read this article and I get excited. Yay, Daisy likes the thing I like. I was watching something about Julian Glover, General Veers, but also Grand Maester Pycelle in Game of Thrones, and he was done with the show. He begged to be off. He was like, "Hey, it just wasn't fun anymore. Cersei kept making fun of me, and I couldn't get back. You know, I was just being beat down by Cersei, and I asked the producers to take me off the show."
Veers wanted off the show.
Veers went off the show, and they convinced him to stick around for one final season. And I got to tell you, I'm in the middle of a rewatch, and I'm like, oh, that kind of bums me that Julian Glover lost interest in the show. It doesn't matter because he still did an amazing job because he's an amazing actor, to borrow Daisy's use of the word amazing. You know, so, but I fall for it too. So that's, anyways, this article had just a lot of those thoughts where I just almost have to remind myself, this doesn't prove anything. How I interact, like you said, with the movie or what I get out of the movie is for me the only thing that matters.
Right, right. And I think that we can, even if an actor is like, yeah, I wasn't sure about this choice, but I nailed it. I don't think there's anything wrong with us going like, wow, I get so much depth and meaning out of what you did in this performance. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
And the flip side might be Daisy loves this, or, you know, thinks it's a perfect ending, clearly gave her all, and I didn't like what they did with it. I don't think that her thoughts invalidate your experience watching it, and the flip side of it too.
Right. Yeah. If it doesn't work for you, that's totally legitimate. And is, you know, your opinion is your opinion. Yeah. I think also for me, having the experience of having been a writer, a director, an actor, having worked with lots of actors, I think sometimes on social media, I can see this thing where because the actors are the public face of the character, that people feel like the actors are the 100% arbiter of the character, right? So if an actor says thumbs up or thumbs down, then that is the, you know, the gavel has come down and the issue's decided. And I think it's just so much more complicated than that. I've worked with actors who really want to dive into every element of the character and really deeply understand it. I've worked with actors who have done like an amazing job in my play, but if I interviewed them afterwards, they couldn't tell me why their character, you know, mattered to the plot. They just nailed the individual moment. They understood what they needed to, and they nailed that moment. You know, actors work differently. And I think that they're actors who want to own everything about the character and understand it on every level. And the other characters who want to like do what the script asks, do what the director says, and then they move on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's different. And that's there's this weird sometimes. I mean, I get it. I am, you put a rock and roll documentary in front of me, whether I love the band or not, I'm there for it. Like, there's one coming out about the Bee Gees. I wouldn't describe myself as a Bee Gees fan. I can't wait to watch it because I want to know every corner. Chris Taylor's book, How Star Wars Conquered the Galaxy, universe. I love it. I want a sequel, but it's like, they bleed over too much. And that's kind of, I don't know. That's kind of what this is reminding me of. You listen to you talk and your experience there, Joseph, it's like, reminds me, like, let's not forget Harrison Ford was kind of like, all right, let's get this one out of the way. I fight Ewoks. What are Ewoks? All right, let's go.
Right. I mean, and also speaking of, you know, actors who felt like they would never want to ever touch Star Wars again, absolutely coming around to like, I'm going to go see Solo twice.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyways, just some deep thoughts out of a headline. No right or wrong answer, which is kind of why I want to discuss it. Just what we take from it. And I always say beware of agendas, but sometimes that is me looking in the mirror and reminding me, am I always looking for you know, things that are in line with my joy of Star Wars. And of course you are. That's just the way it is. Just be careful over there. But at the end of the day, Joseph, I think we're happy that Daisy Ridley is happy with Rey.
Absolutely. I think she is a great actor, and I hope that she just has the exact career that she wants and that we get to keep seeing her in all sorts of different roles.
Absolutely. And now we've got some surprise DLC content. Are you ready for this, Star Wars Squadron fans? That's right. You asked for it. You wanted the best. You got the best. The hottest B-Wing in the world. B-Wing and the TIE Defender. Apologies to KISS fans. Yes, so the folks behind Star Wars Squadrons had said, hey, the game is out and the game is what it is. Enjoy it. And people put their hands in the air and said, where are the B-Wings? We want B-Wings. And while we're at it, TIE Defenders. So you get that. This December, you can fly the B-Wing or you can fly the TIE Defender. And then also, you get custom matches coming in December. And then four ship components at a new multiplayer map, Fostar Haven, coming out now, right now, end of this month. So I know you and I enjoyed Squadrons, and we haven't really picked it up since. At least I haven't, not for any bad reasons, just time and completed the story. Loved the story, loved the characters. Not good at flying, so not the best experience for me. But I do love the game. So your reaction to this news, Joseph, then I want to discuss the B-Wing itself.
I am happy for the people who cried out in one unified voice, please, please give us a B-Wing. Ooh, a TIE Defender too? Cool. Yeah, this is great. I think this is, again, a thing where it's nice when everything works. People made a game that a bunch of people love. It justified them adding more when they thought they weren't going to originally add more, which is great. I was not naturally good at this game when I started playing it. I haven't finished the game, which is a combination of just being really busy and trying to make time for all of the things. And that also for me, because I'm not great at flying, it means getting past that. Like, some people seem to be able to just blast past it. Like, this game's intuitive, so they immediately get to the joy of flying. And every time they're like, you know, here's your mission, here's why it matters, I'm like so pumped. And then like, yeah, let's go do it. And then I just run into something. So I have to work past that to get to the joy. So I will finish it, but I have not finished it yet. Yeah. So this is one of those things where I get to be super happy for the people who are masters at this game and are just counting the seconds until they can download the B-Wing and the TIE Defender patch.
Yeah, I would go for those briefings and then crash or fail. And then I was really disappointed that I had to lower the skill level to like the rookie pilot level. Like, I didn't want to do that. And then when I finally slumped my shoulders and said, I can't complete this Y-Wing bombing run unless I do this, it was a bad day around the house. Felt real sad. I did want to, this got me thinking about the B-Wing. I love the Y-Wing. I've barfed that information up far too many times, but there comes the old B-Wing, the Blade Wing, shows up in Return of the Jedi. It's got a great lore to it. Got a little bit more now in canon and Rebels. So what was your reaction to the B-Wing growing up, Joseph? And then where your thoughts are about the B-Wing now?
Yeah, I loved the B-Wing growing up. This is such a great question because it really made me go back in time and really think about how I thought about things. One of the things I loved about Star Wars is, and I've said this before, you know, if you just Google what a lot of things visually looked like in the 1980s on television, it was just a lot of beige. It was a whole world of beige. And what I loved about Star Wars, it was so weird and colorful and different. And it really was a galaxy far, far away. So when I saw the A-Wing and the B-Wing, I was like, new ships. And I was like, the A-Wing, that's it's cool, but it's not that different. The B-Wing's bonkers. What is this? How does this even fly? So I loved it because it was weird. And I've since come around and I love the A-Wing because I think that that aesthetic in Star Wars of the really sleek and the really minimal has a great place in Star Wars too. And I've come to really like the A-Wing, and it's often what I will choose in a flying game that I'm halfway decent at. But I really liked the B-Wing when I was a kid because it was just weird.
Yeah, it was. It was mesmerizing in a way, the way it would move and rotate around. And then, you know, the old lock S foils in attack position, one of my favorite phrases in Star Wars. And just like, oh, it, what, just the wings go out, but it, I don't know. Yeah. And I'm like you, I couldn't explain it. So therefore I loved it. I had one of those, I had one of those, the actual models, not Lego sets, but like back in the day, like actual click together, maybe even glue together, models of the B-Wing. And I put it together and I would study how the ship worked and I would just flip it around the cockpit. Here I am 7, 8 years old. It turns like this. Wow. Do you get dizzy? Like all that kind of stuff just would always be in my head about it. So even though I love the Y-Wing, the workhorse of the Rebel fleet, the B-Wing was its exotic cousin
that I yeah.
try to figure out. Yeah.
Did you like the A-Wing when you were a kid?
I did like the A-Wing. I still love the A-Wing. It's so funny because the X-Wing, I love the X-Wing. The X-Wing design is amazing. It's just so simple and classic. And I joke and sometimes call it the quarterback of the Rebel fleet, meaning it's popular and all the cheerleaders love it and everyone roots for it and the town comes out to root for it. And there's the clunky old Y-Wing in the corner. And I identify more with the Y-Wing because of that. But I don't ever want to discount the beauty that is the X-Wing. But there's something just simple and direct about the A-Wing. And I love that it's a lighter, option, a little more dangerous. You might get hit and blow up faster, but you're going to be fast and move around. So I do like playing it too. I think I control that one the best in the flying games too.
Yeah, I think it lends itself to being a little bit more brash, right? Of just wanting to zip around fast.
Yes. It's like maybe it's because I drove a Plymouth Colt for years, which was not fast, but was tiny like that. So.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. I think in the X-Wing, in the TIE Fighters, I think they are so classic, but they're kind of nothing quite looked at like them. I think a lot of things got designed after the fact to look a little bit more like an X-Wing. But like that, for me, that was always the bar of like a new ship's got to be at least as weird as an X-Wing.
Oh yeah. And the classic Battlestar Galactica ones, we always make the jokes. George definitely thought they looked like X-Wings or the whole show looked like a Star Wars show. But the X-Wing, you're right. The TIE Fighter is just so unique. Maybe at times I take it for granted. I do love a good TIE Interceptor though, but Defender, I'm okay with the TIE Defender. I'm glad it's showing up. I like the use of it in Rebels. But I always felt I always felt like sometimes the outside of the films, some of the versions of the TIE Fighters just got a little crazy for me. This one's got 9 wings.
Yeah, I think I like TIE Defender because of the narrative weight of it. The aesthetic is one thing, but I love that idea. Like it was this or the Death Star. And I'm curious to see, if that, I'm not clear exactly on if these ships are just for like multiplayer modes or if they're going to be worked into story or exactly how they fit in. But I like the TIE Defender because it's got some meat on its bones with all those wings. Yes. And with the story behind it.
I'm right there with you. And you know what? That is a very Force Center answer from both of us, right? We like this ship because of the themes and narrative. I totally agree with you on that. Otherwise, it's just a fun, wonky, wacky looking ship. But I like the meaning behind it in modern canon. So there you go, Squadrons fans. Get ready to play the B-Wing or the TIE Defender. Final news story of the day. We always like to check on Mando Monday. Not a whole lot. Some cool, they always release the concept art. You can check that. They got the Baby Yoda and Space Macaroons. You can get that there too. But Mando Mondays itself with the merch, we finally got, you can get your hands on The Mandalorian, the Ultimate Visual Guide. Pablo Hidalgo, the author on this one, as usual. Good, nice, simple cover. I like this. It's just Mando and all his Mudhorn Beskar glory on the cover there. Look, no secret, you can do other versions. That's what these Ultimate Visual Guides end up being, version 1, 2, 3, or more. This is clearly just going to be season 1, unless they delayed it a little bit, which they did for some of the publishing that they want to add some season 2 stuff in. I'm not expecting that, but are you ready for 4 or 5 versions of this book, Joseph? Are you going to wait or are you going to dive in now?
Yeah. Is this one actually called the Ultimate Visual Guide or just the first visual guide?
It is the Ultimate Visual Guide, but so is, I'm looking at it right now. So are the 2 Star Wars Ultimate Visual Guides I have.
Yeah, sometime they got to at least call one penultimate. This is the penultimate. This is the second to last visual guide. No, I'm very happy for it. It's going to be really interesting to see. The books are always just, pretty. They're always aesthetically, you know, nice to see and all that. But I think what I'm most intrigued by is Pablo Hidalgo getting in there and explaining some things. That's, you know, what people expect of the visual guide. I think it's what Pablo Hidalgo likes to do. I see that cover and it should just be called, this is a guide to how tracking fobs work, because I guarantee you that Pablo Hidalgo is going to have some fun, you know, space opera version of science of how the tracking fobs work. And I think there's this fun tension there that The Mandalorian as a show is, I think, still much more interested in that tip of the iceberg storytelling. They're much more, it's much more in the spirit of TIE fighters make noise in space because it's cool. Don't worry about the science. And the nature of the visual guide is to get into a little bit of the how and the whys and the fun, weird details. So that's going to be fun to have that those kind of sitting side by side.
Yeah, definitely going to add that. Love those. And yeah, Pablo, he exceeds in this area, because I imagine him sitting in his office having a lot of fun just creating these stories. So we'll see you there. Also released today, we got a Disney Emoji Blitz. If you want all your favorite heroes, Moff Gideon, the Child, Mando, and a Death Trooper, apparently, in Cara Dune in emoji form, you got that. There is a new 5G Google Pixel Google Play phone that's out of my pocketbook wrench. And then this one here, we got Greef Karga and the Child are joining Hasbro's main line of 3¾ vintage figures. Joseph, what do you think about this? This is your area of interest.
Yeah, this is thrilling. I love that they're kind of doling out the action figures so slowly. I need to get a little bit more on top of it, because I see them in the morning, like, and Hasbro Pulse is going to have the pre-order, and like by the time I, you know, have time to Google it, the pre-order is long done. So then I'm like, oh, I hope I can find this Vintage Greef, which is just a fun thing to say out loud. Vintage Greef is a must own. I love his new outfit. I love the character. I really want that one. Yeah, and I really want the Child. I think this is going to be fun too as the years go on, and if the popularity of Mandalorian stays strong, they're going to have so many variations of Mando with his armor to sell, and they're going to have so many variations of which Pram, because the Child's going through them really fast.
Yeah, Pram 1, Pram 2.1.
Exactly.
Yeah, good looking figure. Good sculpt. Good, you know, the close up detail on it. The paint chipped off. That's good stuff.
Yeah. That's a Pram that's seen some action. So yeah, I'm thrilled for both of these. And if I can get my grubby hands on them, I will.
Oh yeah, you will. A couple items left here. We got the Igloo has released some comic Playmate Pals. This is basically, you know, take a picnic lunch in a Mando cooler here. We got comic frames, and then the one that's got Child art says snack and protect. I think our listener Robbie Smith's probably going to want this one here. It is, but here's the thing: it's got the Child on the side. It's the snack one, and it's got a frog half down his throat with the words "nom nom nom" on it. You know, and can you be surprised when he goes around the galaxy eating eggs and space macaroons?
The Child has a deep, deep hunger, and it is a part of the show, both on every level. It is every level, from whimsy to true depth of theme of how do we all feel about this, you know, but it's unignorable. The Child eats.
The final thing is one up my alley here. I love my Star Wars Lego sets, and we got the new Trouble on Tatooine set, 276 pieces. We got Mando, the Child, and a Tusken Raider. We got the speeder. We got a little hut with a little campfire, and we got the scorpion arrows that they use to take down the Krat dragon. There, I really like that. That looks real detailed. So this will definitely find its way to my shelf and probably my brick building show over on Twitch. There's a cheap plug very soon, because who doesn't love building campfires? And look at that little Child Lego set. That's a little.
Yeah, I would happily trade that scorpion, which is really, really cool, that their weapon, for Cobb Vanth, so I could have a full campfire there.
Yeah, well, you know what? I think maybe they'll release a complimentary set called Protecting the School or something like that, or Drinks with a Weak Way, and we'll get that set. I love that. So that is this week's Mando Monday merch dump. Been kind of fun as they doled us all out slowly with the season. It's like an added bonus. Like you get the episode on Thursday night into Friday. We do a review, and on Monday you get all the merch like you were going to a concert, and it's out in the parking lot. Buy your shirt here. Do it now. Do it now. So that is a look at Star Wars news. We are going to get onto our questions after a quick break. But before we do, we want to do our Force Center Recommends, an audiobook we think you should try out on us. And Joseph, this one is kind of homework for the upcoming episode.
Yeah, we are recommending From a Certain Point of View, The Empire Strikes Back, because we are going to be discussing that the next 2 weeks. We're breaking up. There's so many stories, 40 stories for 40 years. So we're discussing the first 20 stories this week and the last 20 stories next week. So we recommend you check it out.
Absolutely. Download your free audiobook today. Go to audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. Again, that's audibletrial.com/ForceCenter for your free audiobook. All right, quick break. We'll reset on the other side. Your questions here on ForceCenter. Hey, Force Center friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, Force Center's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars-loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to JennyLanda.com, that's JennyLanda.com, for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as JenniferLanda1138.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes. Nice
dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment,
you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
All right, welcome back to Force Center, my Force Center friends. We looked at the news. Now it's time to look at the cues. Yep, that is a great little jingle. Just
well, we have four great questions all about Quiznos subs. We're changing the podcast entirely. It's all sandwich talk. I am lying for fun. That's what jokes are, lying for fun. Sometimes, not always. Anyway, let's get back to Star Wars. We got four great questions about Star Wars, as we always do. Two from Twitter, two from our patrons on Patreon. Our first question comes from Twitter and Callum Morrison. Callum says, in The Last Jedi, when Luke reaches out to Leia connecting back to the Force, do you think Luke and Leia had a conversation? And if so, what about? I love listening to you guys talk Star Wars. Keep up the great work. Thank you very much. That's very kind, Callum. Ken, let's dig in. Do you think Luke and Leia had a Force conversation, or just a brief connection?
I so funny. I want to say that they had a conversation, and you know, not a normal one, obviously, but something more. But I don't. My heart keeps saying no. And then that what we saw, the connection they had with him appearing on Crate and them talking and her making the joke about the hair and all that stuff. That was it. That was the first time. And that other than that, it was a Luke. It was a Leia. It was a energy. It was a little kind of bump in the Force, if you will, and that's kind
yeah,
of
yeah. I agree with you. I think the spirit of their conversation on Crate is really like these are the things that they need to say to one another, including Leia's. You know, I need to sort of diffuse the tension with this joke and this bit of connection, this bit of you know family of joking about the hair because she knows how dire the stakes are. All of that feels like the first true conversation. And I think that I really like that scene in The Last Jedi where they just briefly connect, being a brief connection in some ways that gives it even more weight, knowing that that it was Leia that was getting through to Luke in a way, because that's what really turns him around initially is when, you know, Rey says, your sister here sent me here with hope. You know, if you're not going to follow through on that, then she at least deserves to know why. And then at least he goes to the Falcon. And then R2's like, hey, remember Leia? Remember your sister? So I think it is it's one of the things that dovetails nicely with everything we're told in The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi that, yeah, Luke is powerful. Yes, Luke is, you know, a Jedi. Yes, he's a legend, but he's also Leia's brother. And to Leia, he is hope. So I think there's something really beautiful about that moment that Rey has given him enough hope to try to tentatively reach out in the Force. And what he is reaching out for himself is he's been wrestling with all this sadness and frustration and doubt and fear. And, you know, he reaches out to, you know, the most constant source of light and hope he's ever known. And that's Leia. And Leia has been scouring the galaxy because she knows he is a symbol of hope. So the fact that they just briefly connect in their relationship is so powerful that it's what both of them needs. It's what almost turns Luke around in that moment before he sees Rey with Kylo. And I do believe on like a functional level, that connection to Luke, that connection to hope is what wakes Leia and gets her back in the game. So I feel like there's so much meaning in them just kind of briefly touching, that they're so connected and they mean so much to one another that just that brief touch is that powerful, is more elegant to me than how you doing, you know?
Yeah. 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 No, I you're right in line with you on that there too. And just the idea, and this is, I don't want this to go into controversial hot take territory. You know, growing up thinking that we'd get a 7, 8, and 9 and Luke and Leia and Han were in it. Of course, I would have thought we were going to get more of their interactions, conversations, adventures, all those things. And we didn't. We got this version where the heroes were scattered, or they were part of a generation that needed to pass everything on to the next one. And even though there's times, Joseph, where I have that, like, oh, you know, we didn't get the big three together one more time. I totally can agree with people if you're super frustrated about that. I feel some of that. But what we did get, what you're describing, and the connection, and this little almost, you know, not ships passing in the night, but ships, you know, swimming by each other in the force. And the moment we do get on Crait, to me, almost just it makes everything we did know before in 4, 5, and 6 and any other adventures in the lifetime you spent with them as a fan. It was this great ode to that. And it made me go back to what I, the stories I'd heard and just cherish them even more. If that makes sense, of just like, because I got so little, it meant everything I got before.
Yeah. Now, it kept it very, especially between Luke and Leia, it kept it very legendary. Like they said the things they truly needed to say to one another. And it didn't ever become pedestrian. Yeah. And then on the other side of it, I had some assumptions for myself, some headcanon really, after watching Rise of Skywalker, of I don't think that Luke in Last Jedi is aware of Rey's lineage. And I think maybe Luke and Leia communing together after he has passed into the Force is when they start to realize, like, that's who she is. That's where she's from. That's the challenge she's facing. So even after seeing Rise of Skywalker, I kind of had some headcanon of, like, I think they're really communing after Luke passes into the Force. And then the Rise of Skywalker novelization goes into that more. So I think you do get that other side of it too, of the Skywalker twins do have this, they have a lot to say to one another. It's just in this kind of different form, this different time.
Yeah. Yeah. And the novels, it's one of the things I did love about it.
Absolutely. So great question, Callum. Thank you. We're going to move on to a question from Eric Ortiz. Eric says, Eric actually has a pitch for us that then we're going to give some thoughts on. Mm-hmm. So here's what Eric has to say in his pitch. Opening scene, man exits ship as it lands on Tatooine. The man's body is scarred, white, unkempt hair, cloudy eyes, mechanical hand, Mace Windu. His mission, end the Skywalker line. Only one man stands in his way. Cut to black, title card, Kenobi. What are our thoughts? Ken, that's very, very colorful and dramatic. You can truly see the image in your mind of poor, old, perhaps broken Mace Windu. What are your thoughts on this?
My thoughts are, this is a great pitch, Eric. It would not get go picture from me, but you might get a go picture from someone else. And fantastic. Well done, Eric. The idea of Mace being alive. Look, here's the thing. It's worked before with other characters, right? Looking at you, Maul. So, hey, maybe a Mace with a bit of vengeance in his heart coming back. You know, who knows? But this, I think Kenobi would be able to talk him out of any vengeance.
I was so interested to hear your thoughts. I think for me, Eric paints like a really dramatic and a really fun and a really intriguing picture. And I think my initial reaction is, this is a great for me what if. Like, I would love if they did some of those comic books. On Disney Plus, they're doing, you know, eventually these animated MCU what ifs, and I think that would be a great way to explore some like wild ideas of, like, we know it didn't happen this way, but what if it did, kind of stories. And this for me feels like that kind of exploration. I would love more Mace stories in general. There's that 5 issue comic that's, I think, does some great work to kind of tie his own Jedi perspective and his own life experiences to some of his pivotal choices in the prequel films. I think that's great. So I would love some more Mace stories. There's a part of me that's always really liked that Mace died, period. And as you said, absolutely, characters come back, and characters that you really didn't think would come back. I mean, I think at this point, it's fine for me, for any Star Wars fan, to say somehow fill in the blank returned. That's fine with me. You know, if Maul can return, if Palpatine can return, then anybody can return. And I get that. I appreciate it. But for me, there's something about, I like Mace's failure being total. I like him, him almost succeeding almost succeeding in stopping the return of the Sith and having this really tragic failure. I think there's a part of me of like the stories of Maul and Palpatine coming back, whatever your opinions might be on sort of the space fantasy version of science level of reality of it, story-wise, they are about them clinging to hate. Like Maul literally says it, right? Like, my hate kept me alive when I didn't have a lower half of my body, you know? And I don't think that thing is necessarily the same with heroes. So, and I don't want anybody to hear that of me disliking Mace or not wanting more storytelling with Mace. I'd be thrilled if they're like, yeah, you know what? We're going to pay for it. It worked for Captain Marvel. We'll de-age Samuel Jackson a little bit. Five season Disney Plus Mace Windu. I'd be thrilled. It's not that I don't like Mace Windu or want more. It's just there's a power in his in his death being the sort of the true. He's doing such a great job in Revenge of the Sith of really carrying the tragedy of the Jedi in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I think the character of Mace deserves more storytelling in a book. I'd want it in a book, a Disney Plus series, de-aging, going back, that could work too, or something like that. But I want to analyze him more. I have had conversations, you and I have talked about Mace, and there's times where I think you can make a super cut of all the times he was right, since there's a plot to destroy the Jedi. Well, he figured that one out. You know, like there's that. And then there's a list of mistakes, or the one at the end that you just mentioned, but his treatment of Anakin, or even just the words he uses to talk to Anakin, and there's a whole bunch of things with intended or unintentional consequences. But there's this powerful fighter, there's this powerful, unique Jedi who wants a purple blade so he can stand out in a crowd behind the scenes and in the story, and to just kind of go into his layers. I would love to explore that a little bit more. We got a lot. We've got Dooku and Qui-Gon and all those characters. And Mace pops up. That comic series is great because it ties directly to it. Builds to that moment with his blade above Palpatine, and why he would even hesitate for a second. It kind of not necessarily answers it, just directly addresses it and makes you think about it. So. Yeah, let's get some more Mace.
I love what you're saying, and I think the philosophy that is interesting to me from Mace is, you know, we talk a lot in particular on our Clone Wars Report show about like justice for the Jedi and how carefully they choose when to act. And I think Mace is a Jedi who leans towards the philosophy of like, we declared ourselves the keepers of peace and justice. And in order to do that, things that are clearly wrong, things that are malevolent, we must strike at. And he is very much on the side of action, of you invaded Ryloth, then you're done. You are, you're a Sith, then, and you have control of the courts. I'd prefer the courts, but too bad. Your head's going to roll. I'm committed to my action. I'm moving forward. And then that great question of like, is that a better choice to be more proactive and absolutely moving forward? Or is it better to go like, ooh, but wait, let's really consider our actions. Not that Mace doesn't consider, but you know, we get to see him as a Jedi who is firm in his convictions, even when they're mistakes, and firm in his convictions where maybe if other Jedi listened and they acted more quickly, like Mace, it would be better. And I think that's what's maybe most intriguing to me about Eric's fun pitch, that the idea of if Mace came back, he would have a concrete action that he was going to do, and that he would maybe even be a little bit broken by the horrors of what befell him and the galaxy. But for me, I think if Mace broke in any way, I think that he would, if he survived, I think nothing would matter to him but killing Vader and killing Palpatine. And I think the darkness would be maybe not stopping and thinking about collateral damage, or not stopping and thinking about, you know, is there any possibility to get to Anakin? I think Mace, if he came back like this in his pitch, would just be like, Vader and Sidious have to die, period. And would that break him as a Jedi to be like, that's all he's holding in his heart is his desire for them to die. Not just to protect people, but like for like a deep, like they have to die. That would be really interesting to me. And I think that's where if he broke, to me, that's where I think he would go. I think if he came to, this is really compelling too, and be interesting too, of like, yeah, I killed Vader, I killed Sidious, the Empire fell, and these kids can't exist either because they're a threat. That's breaking real far to me. So I think for this pitch for it being the Kenobi show, upset powerful Mace Windu deciding that Skywalker twins can't be would be a physical challenge to Kenobi, but I don't think it would be a moral challenge even for even half a second. I think Kenobi would feel, I am entirely right that we don't know what this boy's destiny is going to be. You can't do this, Mace. You have fallen. Mm-hmm. So I think for Kenobi's show, big physical challenge, but not an emotional or moral challenge.
I love this idea of, hey, Kenobi, I'm alive. What are you doing here? You're protecting the offspring of Anakin? No, you're not. There you go.
Yeah, let's meet Mace, I think Mace coming to him and going, you're waiting for what? The will of the Force spoke. Let's go kill them. Let's go kill Vader and Sidious. Yeah, great question, or pitch rather. Eric, fun to discuss, fun to spend some quality time on Mace Windu, who is a great character. Moving on to our questions from our patrons on Patreon. This comes from a PQ. PQ says, as High Republic kicks off in a largely print medium, do you feel a stronger need to stay up on all the books and comics as it is the sole place the story is being told? Well, I try to stay up on all Star Wars content. I've never felt the need to outside of the movies or TV shows. Now that print is the sole medium of High Republic, I feel a stronger pressure to stay up on each comic and book. Thanks for fostering such a great community. Pat Quinn, that's who the PQ is. It's Pat Quinn. This is a great question. Yeah. If you've never really dived into the books and comics, but said, I'm staying up with anything that happens on a screen. And now High Republic right now is just in print, just books, comics. How do you approach that? What are your thoughts on it, Ken?
This is a thought provoking because it's making me kind of look at where my fandom is right now in terms of just the amount of stuff that is out. And I think, look, this year, this time period, not even 2020, but just this era in the last year or so has really taken its toll on a lot of us just outside real world stuff. And we're all a little bit more exhausted, aren't we? So this year has found me more than any other year since 2014, when all this kind of exploded again with the sale and the new books and the canon comics and novels and everything, where I have been more tired or been more like, oh, I really got that book on baseball legend Buck O'Neill I need to read. And I haven't had, it's still sitting on my desk, you know, like I've had more of those thoughts than I've had in the past. And so because of that, because I just simply couldn't go to my comic shop, I am way behind on all the comics. I still get all the Star Wars comics from Marvel. I don't usually do the IDW ones. And what I've discovered, to my surprise, Joseph, is I'm okay not being completely up to date on them. So just in that regard, Pat, I think you're okay. And I'm there with you on that. But now I do feel that pressure because it is High Republic and I want to know, and I hope I just want to devour it all. I hope the series is that good where I'm like, I need every word. But I'm not going to lie. I feel a little, it's daunting looking at January.
Yeah, no, I am in total agreement with you, with the exception that the book on my shelf is a collection of essays about Laura Palmer from Twin Peaks. Like, I want to read that book. I don't have time. Many, many other books. My book piles are getting into that dangerous, how did he die? His books fell on him level of danger. But I love all of the Star Wars books, but it's been a little harder to keep up, not because of any lack of love or dislike of the books, but just because of the sheer volume of them combined with everything else in life. So as High Republic comes, it really, I love that you called it like a mountain, because it's exactly like a mountain of like, I love the challenge of climbing that. I'm going to get so much out of it, but it is also still work to climb a mountain. So I'm super, super excited for High Republic. But I'm going to see how well I can do to keep up with everything, because I haven't always kept up with the comics. I'm still behind on some of them. I wait for them to come out in those, collections and download them to the iPad. Mm-hmm. So I'm still behind on a few things, but the comics have been really rewarding as well. So I think maybe for advice for Pat Quinn and for myself is I'm going to try to keep up with what I want to. And then if I can't keep up with everything, if I can't get every issue of a comic, one of the great things about our community is there are so many resources that you can just go and read a summary. I'm sure our friends Alex and Molly at Star Wars Explained are going to have great videos. And I think for me, and maybe anybody else who's daunted by the sheer volume of High Republic, of saying, you know, let's take that Star Wars lesson that it's okay to let go. It's okay to, you know, set our video games on the lower level if we want to just experience the story. Mm-hmm. It's okay to read the books, but read the summaries of the comics and to just reconnect with, this is supposed to be joyful. And what we truly want out in our hearts as fans is to keep up with the lore and keep up with the imagining this new part of the galaxy spinning out. There are resources to do that in ways that aren't, you know, reading every single page, every single panel.
Yeah. Yeah. Without a doubt, I crack open every book and every comic, hoping that a new favorite Star Wars moment is there, or revelation, or a lesson. I'm moved by the lessons even more than the other things these days. But yeah, I was letting go. There's a great way to look at it. Not feeling that was, particularly with the comics, that I need to know the week it came out, or else I'm behind. And it's not just, I'm not talking about putting together a podcast every week with you, Joseph. I'm just like talking as a fan. Like, I don't want to be left behind. I want to have the answers for the questions if they get asked. And to know that that can sometimes get in front of your just in enjoyment of it. Cause then you're not reading, you're not open to the lessons and the moments and the characters they're being presented. You're mentally just taking notes at every panel and page. And that can be a problem too. So I think it's a very realistic question, Pat, because I've had a lot of these conversations with Star Wars fans, like, oh, I just can't keep up. Oh, I don't even watch the animated shows. It's too much for me. And that's an okay sentiment to have as a Star Wars fan. You are not less of a fan.
Yeah. I think that sometimes on social media in particular, even just sincere love of Star Wars can start to feel like a race, right? I know I feel that with mm-hmm. like, oh man, I gotta read this from a certain point of view, because if there's anything, you know, really surprising, it's gonna be a clickbait headline, and I'll see it, and like, and all that stuff, you know, just gotta try my best to let go. I think maybe for Pat's question really directly, I think if I had not read anything yet of Star Wars, I'd been a screen fan but not a book or comic fan, I'd just buy the first. Or, you know, in whatever way you do, buy it, get it from the library, experience the first High Republic one, and then decide if it's for you, you know, and if it's not, you got a world mm-hmm. of summaries and videos to keep you caught up.
Yeah, a world of summaries.
And perhaps the most boring ride at Disneyland, right? The wide world of summaries.
Yeah, it's. Yes, absolutely. The brilliant colors of pages of summer. Yes.
And now the PowerPoint of doom, a scary ride. All right. Our final question is from Adam Knight. Adam says, forgive me if I've asked this question already in another format. However, I am curious whom the Force Center crew thinks are secret Jedi or Sith in other franchises. For example, Morpheus from The Matrix just screams Jedi Master to me with his deep patience, willingness to believe in his own path and fate, and how his beliefs do not require others to believe in them as well. Smiley face. Adam, thank you for the smiley face. Thank you for the really fun question. Ken, I'm always excited to hear your answers to questions, but I'm particularly excited to hear your answers to these, because you and I have our other loves outside of Star Wars that we often pull into the conversation. I'm so curious to see where you go with secret Jedi and Sith in other storytelling.
Suddenly I feel pressure. Suddenly I feel pressure. I do have some answers. I hope you enjoy. So I'm going to go with normal ones. I pretty much anyone from Lord of the Rings, right? All right, fair enough. But I'm forcing myself to choose one, and I'm going with Galadriel, especially as presented by Kate Blanchett in the pictures. She, to me, it's almost like she's a Will, or she's the father, son, and the daughter. She's on Mortis to me. She is of this world, not of this world. She can be understood and she cannot be fully explained. And she has so many powers and just beyond just, I got a lightsaber and I'm going around the galaxy. Like, she could probably do some damage or save the world. You know what I mean? Like, there's something else going on there. And the fact that she understands that she could be tempted. She could make a wrong decision, and why she tests herself with the ring when she we first see her and Frodo together there. I'll go with her. She's got more than just Jedi. She
oh,
might
wow.
Be
okay. Like, you got Galadriel on Mortis, keeping everything in balance.
Yes. But I'm not done. I'm going to Temple of Doom, Secret Sith, Molaram. All right. I'm a big Indiana Jones fan. Temple of Doom, not my favorite. Growing up, even, it scared me. I'm one of the reasons it's PG-13. My mom probably wrote some letters. But Molaram, I mean, come on. He's taking hearts out of bodies. He's sacrificed. He's got, kind of some red and black paint themes. He's Sith. He's Sith. Well, he's possessing or Indiana Jones gets possessed. I mean, he's almost like a Sith acolyte.
Or he's like stealing Sith other term. People's life force, right? I mean, when he's taking those hearts. Yeah. Yeah. And you're right. Oh, yeah. Just a color scheme. He's definitely, if the Sith is just like a baseball team, he is on Team Sith with those colors.
Like, if I was 9 in 1999 and saw Phantom Menace and Darth Maul, and then around the same time was introduced to Temple of Doom, I'd probably be confused and think, oh, that's Maul's friend, right? Like, it just
makes sense. Yeah. Those are great picks. No. Do you have more?
Yeah.
Good. I did two others, as well, so we'll be balanced.
Okay, we can go back. We can hit some of yours, or I can wrap up here. These ones might not be as
go
inspiring.
For it.
I'm going to Field of Dreams and Kevin Costner's character Ray Kinsella. To me, he is Luke on Tatooine. He's staring out at the twin suns. He's hearing voices. He feels he has a destiny that he has to go chase, and he doesn't quite understand how to get there. He needs mentors. He makes decisions along the way. He makes mistakes along the way, but in the end is rewarded for his faith. So I'm saying, yes, not Kevin Costner himself, but Ray Kinsella from Field of Dreams is a Jedi. And also related to a little baseball in this movie as well, I'm saying Mike the Bartender is played by Michael Caine in the 1990 film Mr. Destiny.
Wow, you went far outside of genre.
I went way outside. I know the question was related to franchises, but I'm sorry, those two films, they're plugged into baseball.
Yeah, that's great. So tell me more about this bartender. I don't know this movie.
Mr. Do yourself a favor and don't watch it. You got Jim Belushi, Linda Hamilton, John Lovitz, Michael Caine. It came out about 1990. Wow, that's crazy. It's just the story of a guy who, by the way, when I watched the movie, he seemed so old. He's 35. It's his 35th birthday. He blames all his life's problems on having struck out in a key moment during his high school baseball game. Like, it's like, if I had got the hit, my life would have been different. So the bartender turns out is like a guardian angel-like figure. Michael Caine playing Mike, get it? Angel, Mike, Michael the Archangel, got it. And he's a bartender, a cab driver, all those kind of things. But he shows him, it's a little bit of a, Christmas Carol type, let me show you, or Wonderful Life, I should say. A little Christmas Carol, too. Let me show you what your life would have been. And, he gets the sexy wife, Rene Russo plays, that he had a crush on, and all those kind of things. And it turns out, not as good as the life as you thought. And you got to be where you are now. You got to have your mind on what you're doing here, Luke. So I think there's force in there. I think so. I'm saying Michael Caine's my
that is absolutely great. Yeah, I think it's so much fun to take some of the themes that we like in Star Wars. And, since Lucas is pulling from, a lot of myths that have, similar foundations, that, the ideas pop up in dressed up in really different ways. And I think that's really cool that you like Michael Caine in this only okay baseball movie. It's absolutely a Jedi, because that when you describe why, it's powerful, live in the moment. Don't always be looking for what could have been, but value what you have. Like,
there you go. And if any of you listening, or you yourself, Joseph, are going to try to watch this movie, please watch it on the format it's intended.
VHS. I will be kind and rewind and all that stuff if I can find one. Yeah, I stuck mostly to genre, but you inspire me now. I'm going to have to go find some non-genre stuff. But that's not cheating at all. Yeah, I'll try to figure out which character in Riverdale I think it might be, is a Jedi. They're all struggling. I think for me, I often go to this because I realize sometimes when I like a character, it is because they share some, you know, foundational ideas with Star Wars stuff. I absolutely love Captain America in the MCU in particular. I love him in the comic books over the years, but I think the way he's portrayed in the MCU is the character who definitely struggles, but he's steadfast in that he does know that he's got this pretty simple moral conviction of, you know, when bullies are hurting people, somebody needs to stand up to them, you know, and it tracks through when, you know, he's getting interviewed for the super soldier program and he doesn't even really know it. And he's asked, like, so you want to go kill Nazis? And he thinks, and he just says, I don't like bullies. And that tracks all the way through to he's fighting Thanos for the fate of the galaxy. And it's just to him, it's just another bully. It's just somebody who is hurting innocent people. So he's got this, you know, great purity to him. You know, the shield is very much like the lightsaber. It can be used for attack, but sort of symbolically it is defense. In his story through the MCU in particular, his movies has this great resonance with some of the Jedi storytelling where he is Captain America. He was given the costume. He was given the name as this, you know, kind of piece of propaganda, but he's this person who believes in the purity of the idea of America. And he keeps saying, I find faith in individual people that I meet, but every time I turn around, the institution that I'm in has kind of corrupted and starts to ask me to do things that I know in my heart of hearts isn't right. Like first film, the government fails him. Second film, SHIELD fails him. Civil War, the Avengers themselves kind of fail him. And he's always like, I don't want to be in conflict, but I have to find the way to be true to what I know is right. And that really starts to tie into great Jedi storytelling about, you know, there's almost like some Captain America Ahsoka lines of like, you're teaching me this stuff, but you're not quite doing it. So I got to walk away and do it myself. So I could go on and on about Captain America because I just did. So Captain America for me, Jedi. I also think Wonder Woman, again, a character that I love in comic books, but her film's got some great stuff in it. If you, you know, kind of dig into the actual theme that, you know, she has this or ideas that she has this. She starts out kind of like Luke with this really simple. There's a bad guy. Ares made all the humans do bad things that they shouldn't do. And then it's, you know, kind of has the epiphany of like, it's not, Ares kind of nudged them, but that's what humans do. And Ares is making this very Sith-like argument of, you know, they don't deserve your compassion, your defense, your love. And, you know, kind of the key theme of Wonder Woman ends up being like, it's not about what you deserve. It's about what you choose. And she chooses to defend people because that is right in and of itself. And that's just like such a great Jedi thing too of like, yeah, I'm gonna defend people because they deserve to be defended, period.
Yeah, I would definitely put both great choices so far. Wonder Woman's an absolute Jedi to me. I love that film that you're describing, especially the first two acts. I just really, really love. But yeah, that whip, that's a
it is. It's a light whip, and it makes you tell the truth. That's so great. It's so great. And yeah, I mean, and there's a lot of symbolism going on there too, obviously, of it, not subtle that she thinks the sword is the great power and discovers that she herself is the great power. And then literally, like, again, a symbol of defense with her bracelets or bracers being like, you know, the true strength and her being the true strength more than anything. So yeah, a lot of great stuff going on there. So then, two Sith, one, the Master slash Missy from Doctor Who. The Master is sometimes just a scenery chewing arch villain who just is totally selfish. Everybody in the galaxy is beneath him and he deserves to rule it. Very straightforward Sith stuff. There's some storytelling later on, when there's a regeneration of the Master, called, the Mistress or Missy, where the Master feels the pull to the light, and it's like a great like Kylo Ren Vader version of a Sith told in Doctor Who of like she wants to connect to the Doctor, and the Doctor tries to teach her like this is why you should just help people, this is why you should just be kind, and she's like, I'm trying, it's not quite working for me. And it's an honest like philosophical trying to see it the other way, so I love that. And then this is the one that I was curious, this is one of the first times I was like, will Ken agree with this? I'm gonna put out there for Sith Tywin Lannister.
And that includes my always complicated relationship with the Empire, where I kind of like them more, but no, I shouldn't.
Yeah, well, I think Tywin is this guy who, like, some of the stuff he says almost makes sense, and you can almost see his point of view, but then you strip it down, and it's just endless selfish greed, and it's just endless his power, right? Everything is about him retaining his power and the Lannister name and the tradition. And for me, there's even like just this little bit of kind of cruel rule of two thing going on, where he wants his children to be competent and powerful to serve him, and he kind of wants them to prove that by challenging him, but he doesn't want them to actually overcome him. So it's almost like this rule of two sort of dance of like, I want you to try to kill me, but then when you do, I'll smack you down again and make you earn my respect again, and just this horrible gross cycle.
Yeah, no, I agree with that fully. I you know, probably a large part because of Charles Dance, what he brings to that character. He's great in the books too, but on the show, he's just spectacular. And it is because there's a side to it. There's sides to him that, you know, that you're almost won over by him, and that's part of the problem. And you're like, oh, you know, but yeah, no, I agree with that fully, because this he didn't necessarily create the world that they're in, but he knows how to win at it the most, and so it's easy just to look at it and go, yeah, that's, I guess that's the way to do it. And then what brings him down, his love, it's not even love of family, but his need for family, like you're talking about, and his kids bring him down literally with Tyrion. But just we watched the final season 4 episode just the other night here at the house, which is his death, and he's almost brought down earlier by the conversation with Cersei, where she's just like, "All you just never gave us one look, and the truth is in front of you the whole time." And so what brings him down, much like say Palpatine, he can't factor in connection, compassion, empathy, or love. It's going to trip him.
He just doesn't comprehend it. Yeah. Yeah. And his death, it does make me think of Palpatine. It's ironic. You know, I killed him in his sleep. He could prevent everything, but his own death. Excellent. My Good final answer. One Good is Dale Cooper from Twin Peaks as both. There's some great stuff going on with Dale Cooper. There's some part of him that he's a Jedi, but then, you know, a lot of the storytelling of Twin Peaks is always duality, and the duality that gets explored with Dale Cooper eventually, to me, then my Twin Peaks hot takes for the few people who might care, that the duality of Dale Cooper when he's struggling between good and evil is his good side is very intuitive and his dark side is very controlling. And that's really juicy Star Wars stuff to me, speaking of letting go.
Okay, that's good. I mean, I almost chose Billy the Kid from Young Guns 2, but he's more Sith than Jedi. But yeah. I love that answer. I wouldn't want you to make this list without Doctor Who.
Oh, thank you, thank you. Right. And I don't want to ever hear another list from you that doesn't include a weird baseball movie.
Mr. Destiny, people, check out Mr. Destiny.
Great questions. Thank you, Adam. Thank you, Pat. Thank you, Eric. Thank you, Calum. And we are excited to take more questions. If you have a question and you're a patron, or you're on Twitter, on social media, got threads going, so you can always add questions there. And that's the best way for me to find them.
Absolutely. You want to find us on Twitter, go to Force Center Pod. We are on Facebook at Force Center Podcast, on Instagram, YouTube as well. Subscribe over there. Podcast is housed on Anchor, available there, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and more, and now Amazon Music. You can get merch at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter and support us directly at patreon.com/ForceCenter, or just tell a friend about ForceCenter. You can follow me at Ken Napsok or go to my website, kennapsok.com. We've been trying to highlight charities, and I'll be darned, I forgot to pull one out, so I'm going to my charity spotlight tab, which is on my website, which is why I have it there. And I want to highlight something that I've actually been a part of for a while, which is Be the Match at bethematch.org. You can become a national bone marrow donor. The process is pretty simple. And that simple swabbing of your mouth to determine if you're right for it could save a life. So go to bethematch.org to do more. Check in.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Joseph Scrimshaw and check out my website for all my other comedy adventures. My website is josephscrimshaw.com. The thing that I would like to promote is not a charity per se, but it is just getting involved. It is the website, the organization voteforward.org. I promoted them a lot during the general election, but they are doing a new campaign for those important Senate runoff elections on January 5th. Where you write letters, nonpartisan, just encouraging people to use their power to go out and vote. If you want to sign up to send some letters to voters, you can go to voteforward.org.
And all of you could become a Jedi if you do that. There, use your voting power. That's a skill. That is it. Great stuff for all of you again with the questions, the new stuff. A lot of fun. We'll see you on Thursday for a look at From a Certain Point of View, The Empire Strikes Back book part one, 20 stories. We'll get the 20 other stories next week so you can read along with us. We'll see you then. For Joseph, for Jennifer Landa, don't forget Jennifer Landa, give her a follow. We play that commercial during the break so you can follow her work. We will see you all next week on the Force.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stevens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.